From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. If you missed yesterday's midday conversation between California Senator Dianne Feinstein and her opponent, State Senator Kevin De Leon, or if you just want to hear it again, you can find a link at capradio.org. A bit later in the hour, I'll talk with Cap Radio reporter Nadine Sabai, who was in San Francisco for that event yesterday. First, though, let's talk about the House of Representatives. 23 flips of Republican-held House seats would give the Democrats control. Some of those key races are in California, some are in the South, and that's where Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler has been on assignment. He's joining us by phone. Hi, Ben.
Hey, good morning, Beth.
So of the 23, let's talk about how many are closely watched in California. At one time, it was as many as seven. The number isn't that high right now, is it?
I think that's fair to say, and I think that's because both parties privately acknowledge that one seat in each direction has dropped off that list of seven competitive congressional races. The race in the Southern Central Valley, the Hanford area, south of Fresno, north of Bakersfield, currently held by David Valadao. Democrats canceled their TV ad buy in earlier this week, and that's a clear signal that they are saying, we don't think we're going to be able to defeat David Valadao. Valadao defeated his Democratic challenger in the primary, TJ Cox, by a nearly 2-to-1 margin. And that's just a lot of votes for a Democratic candidate to be able to come back from in a district like that, especially in a non-presidential election year. So it's likely that that one is off the table, that Republicans are going to hold it. On the Democratic side, it looks like Democrats are in good position to pick up the northern San Diego, southern Orange County congressional seat currently held by the retiring House Republican member Daryl Issa. That's a race pitting Republican Board of Equalization member Diane Harkey against a Democratic challenger Mike Levin, who emerged, both emerged from crowded packs of in the primary to be the two candidates in here. And of all of the competitive congressional races in California, this district was the only one where Democratic votes combined in the June primary outnumbered Republican votes combined. And it is generally acknowledged that Democrats are more likely to vote in general elections than in primary elections, that there's more growth on the Democratic side than the Republican side. So this district is being seen as a pretty safe Democratic pickup at this point. Although, of course, caveats, anything can and often does happen in these races. Polls showing the Democratic candidate Mike Levin with a significant lead there, and Republicans aren't really investing outside resources in that race.
So that leaves us, I'm going to name these by district for people who want to keep an eye specifically on the numbers. If we look at those five, it leaves us with districts 10, 25, 39, 45, and 48 as being the key toss-up districts at this point, right?
I think that's right, yeah. And if you want, we can go through them individually or just talk about them as a group.
I do want to say that District 48, for example, was isolated as maybe being a tipping point district, if you follow Nate Silver's 538, meaning where are we going to get an indication that this flip could be nationwide? And so let's start with District 48. Spend some time there, Ben.
Well, that is the district currently held by Republican Dana Rohrabacher. It's coastal Orange County, stretching from Huntington Beach at the northern part of the county down past Newport Beach, Laguna Beach, down to the, you know, Dana Point area as well. And it's currently considered a toss-up, I think, by the Cook Political Report. And it's an interesting district to watch for this reason. Of all the House Republicans from California, the one most closely aligned publicly and stylistically with President Trump is, I think, Dana Rohrabacher. He's been speaking very favorably about Russia and of course, certainly about the president as well. And Democrats have gone after Rohrabacher as being kind of out there, kind of loony, kind of crazy. The challenger, Harley Ruda, the Democrat, is a more moderate Democrat. Democrats are optimistic about him fitting that district fairly well. He does have some personal baggage that Republicans, outside groups, have been hitting him on. And his numbers appear to have maybe taken a little bit of a slide. But at this point, it seems both parties acknowledge that this one could go either way.
All right. Staying in the South, then, let's talk a bit about Southern Orange County, District 45.
And that one is currently held by Republican Mimi Walters. Her challenger is Democrat Katie Porter, who we caught up with last night at a phone banking event at our campaign headquarters. And we're going to be seeing many of the other candidates, too. We also caught up with a Republican candidate in another nearby district that we can talk about in a bit, too. And Porter, unlike Harley Ruta challenging Rohrabacher, Porter is running, is staking out positions generally seen as more on the liberal end of the Democratic Party. She is for Medicare for all, for example. And she is, you know, when I interviewed her last night, she was speaking very much more about Mimi Walters than about President Trump, criticizing Mimi Walters much more than President Trump, although she did criticize Walters for standing with Trump on votes like the repealing Obamacare and the Republican tax overhaul. So we will see to what extent that works. What's interesting is to contrast Mimi Walters from Dana Rohrabacher, right? So Walters, unlike Rohrabacher, kind of keeps her head down. She speaks, you know, she isn't really far out there opposing President Trump or supporting President Trump. She's just kind of there as a member of Congress. She's influential. She has leadership aspirations, but she hasn't really staken out clear ground vocally on one side of the president or another. And she's been in this district for a while as a state senator before a member of Congress. And so if you're looking at if you're looking at this, you know, swing group of voters who voted for their Republican member of Congress 2 years ago, but did not vote for Donald Trump, either leaving President blank, voting for Libertarian Gary Johnson, or voting for Democrat Hillary Clinton. And there is a sizable group of these swing voters in each of these Southern California congressional districts. How do you get them to change their minds if you're a Democrat? How do you get them to say, right, I dislike Donald Trump so much that I'm going to vote to cast my party out of power in the House of Representatives and make Nancy Pelosi Speaker again? I think it is more possible that a disenchanted, never-Trump Republican might not vote for Dana Rohrabacher than leave off Mimi Walters. And so, I mean, you know, I don't have any evidence to back this up. This is just kind of looking at it at a glance. And this is kind of the thesis we're going to try to test out as we talk to voters in districts over the next couple of days. But it seems plausible that a voter who is disenchanted with Trump might also be disenchanted with Rohrabacher. Less plausible is that a loyal, longtime Republican disenchanted with Trump is also disenchanted with Mimi Walters.
I'm talking with Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler, who is in Southern California on assignment. We are talking about the House races. If 23 across the country flip, then the Democrats, 23 Republican-held seats, the Democrats would take control. Ben, I want you to wrap up talking about two other Southern California districts, 25 and 39. They're both toss-up districts. To what degree in each of them?
Yeah, I think we'll start with the 39th because we're right now down in Orange County, and that's the Eastern Orange County area, Fullerton, Brea. Republican Young Kim, a former assembly member and former congressional staffer to the retiring Republican who holds that seat, Ed Royce, is running against Democrat Gil Cisneros, a lottery winner. And that one, folks seem to think, tips a little bit. Well, it's a toss-up. Republicans are feeling, I think, a little bit better about that race right now than Democrats are. It's the other way around in District 25. That's the northern Los Angeles County suburbs like Santa Clarita. And where I think Democrats are feeling a little bit better about that race than Republicans are right now. The incumbent there, Republican Steve Knight, is seen as a bit of a weaker candidate than someone like Mimi Walters. Whereas the Democratic candidate, Katie Hill, is seen as being a very good candidate on the Democratic side. And so I think, you know, these two are good to pair together because I think while they're both toss-ups, I think one party feels better about one seat and the other party feels better about the other seat.
Right. Before we leave this part of the conversation, let's say something about the district in the north, District 10, because people up in our area are seeing a bombardment of Josh Harder and Jeff Denham ads.
Yes, we are.
We don't see the Southern California race ads, of course, the way you are, but in the north, this is an intense battle.
You've actually reminded me that I need to turn on the local TV news while
you
I'm
should.
Here to get all these TV ads.
Definitely.
You know, usually when I get back to my hotel room, I'm done for the night. But I guess we're always working. This is a toss-up, and it's a very different kind of race from all of the others because it's not suburban. All of the others are suburban, and Democrats think they have a really strong shot in many suburban districts where well-educated voters are really struggling with President Trump. In the Central Valley, a more rural area, I think that's a case where, while although you've got, you know, business groups and of course, you know, farmers who are very concerned about the president's immigration policy, that it is a little bit more Trump country, or a lot more Trump country, than the suburbs in Orange County and Los Angeles County. And so, in theory, longtime Republican Congressman Jeff Denham, himself a farmer, represents the district well, has had moderate words on immigration, although he has voted with the president to repeal Obamacare and for the Republican tax plan. He ought to be seen perhaps as having a decent shot. The Democratic candidate, Josh Harder, is mounting a strong campaign, has a lot of money, and outside groups are backing him as well. And so this one is seen as a toss-up. Harder has been seen as having a bit of a lead in some polling. But I think Republicans are feeling, look, if Republican voters, loyal Republican voters, come home, if they, you know, say, hey, we've been a little reluctant to vote in this race, or to say we're supporting a member of Congress, we're kind of frustrated or disenchanted. But if they come home and say, yes, I'm going to vote like I usually do, yes, I'm going to vote for my member of Congress like I have in the past, then Republicans think they're going to be okay. And Democrats aren't convinced that's going to happen. And so we'll find out in, what, less than 3 weeks.
I am seeing polls, Ben, and contrast this with anything that you're seeing, that putting the likelihood that Democrats win control of the House at a pretty high percentage, somewhere in the 80s in terms of percentage.
So, yeah, I think if you look at, Nate Silver's analysis, and the Cook Political Report also seems to think Democrats have a very good chance. Now, there's a couple of caveats that I would give that, just cautions. And one is, if we look back at 2016, a lot of the same folks were, you know, and by the same percentages, were giving not just Donald Trump the same paltry odds of winning the presidency, but they were giving the Chicago Cubs the same paltry odds of coming back from a 3-1 World Series deficit to the Cleveland Indians. I think I saw Nate Silver point out, after the Cubs had come back to win their first World Series championship in more than 100 years, that their odds to come back from 3-1 were the same as the president's odds are. Wow. And this was, you know, just at that point, a couple days before the election. And so we really just don't know. We really don't know.
Well, that
and
does.
The other caveat, the other quick caveat is that there's been evidence nationwide that Republicans have been energized by the Brett Kavanaugh battle on Capitol Hill. And local polls are going to be trailing indicators of that, because national polls happen much more quickly and frequently than local polls.
It does feed into some press releases I've seen this week from the John Cox campaign, saying that he's seeing a surge in numbers, and that could be this overall Republican push. Or was there any bump, any result from the debate that happened last week? Did you see anything that was directly correlated?
That is not something I'd be comfortable saying, simply because you want to compare poll to poll, the same poll to the same poll from a different month. Like, for example, you want to compare the Public Policy Institute of California poll to the next Public Policy Institute of California poll. And what we had this week was an LA Times poll showing Newsom with a much larger lead than a recent PPIC poll showed. PPIC had Newsom with roughly a 12-point lead that was much narrower than it was after the primary. The LA Times poll, I believe, and I haven't seen the exact numbers, but my understanding is it had a very wide lead for Gavin Newsom, much more than 12 points. And you know, you have to look at those methodologies. You have to look at the way the polls were conducted online versus on the phone. You have to look at how pollsters weighted the results to reflect their best estimates of who will and will not vote. And so I think a better comparison would be if we get another PPIC poll, because the one showing a 12-point margin was before the debate.
Before
if we get another one
between
now and the election day,
right?
Yeah, then I think we're going to have a chance of seeing whether the debate had an impact. The Cox campaign, the release they were sending out, they were trying to push back against jumping to conclusions based on that poll showing Cox severely trailing.
All right. So we were talking about the California governor's race in that discussion.
Yes.
I think let's wrap up with something quick that sets us up for our next segment, Ben. And you know where I'm going with this. This is the status of California's U.S. Senate race, the Feinstein-De Leon race.
And they debated for the first, if you call it a debate, first and only time yesterday at the Public Policy Institute of California, the San Francisco-based think tank. And it was funny. Sally Schilling, our great podcast producer, and I, we landed at the Orange County Airport, and the first thing we did is we went, found a coffee shop where we could watch, or at least I could watch, the Senate debate. And so I saw some of it, but Nadine, who was there, I'm going to leave to her to talk about. It's a race where, again, you've got Feinstein generally showing a pretty big lead. De Leon, running from her left, has a lot of the support that he is getting in polls coming from Republicans who probably aren't aware that he is running to the left of Dianne Feinstein, that he is the author of the Sanctuary State Bill. And if they're aware of that, they are probably not going to vote for either candidate. And so the question is, well, can De Leon make up enough ground against Feinstein among Democrats and among independents? And if he is trying to, he needed a huge audience for a debate. He didn't get it. And so I think most conventional wisdom right now is that Feinstein is poised to win re-election.
All right, Ben, we will take a break and talk to Nadine. But meanwhile, thank you for your reporting from Southern California.
Yeah, and thanks for having me. Hopefully my voice comes back before too long.
All right. Well, thank you, Ben. That is our Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler. And you're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.